Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Philip Newbury here with a special Ask the Expert. And joining me this morning is our good friend Elaine Von Cannon, who is a realtor with Coldwell Banker Traditions. And you know, the chair opposite me is Kevin Onizuk, branch manager with J.G. Wentworth Home Lending. And they are here to answer your questions on buying or selling real estate. Good morning, Elaine, and how are you, and what's happening in the real estate business?
Oh, I'm fine. We have a lot to go over today.
Oh, I know we do.
And I had a question that came in, and after Kevin says hello, we can start on that. Yes. But I'm so glad Philip is doing this because he sounds so proper British, and it makes us sound like we know what we're doing.
Well, yes, I am a Brit. And I want to welcome Kevin as well. How are you, Kevin?
I'm great, Philip. And a few weeks ago, celebrated probably your favorite holiday being a Brit, July 4th, Independence Day.
I know. Yeah, it was. I did celebrate it, but it was commiserations for the Brits. But there we go.
There's naughty colonists.
Got no hard feelings.
Very good, very good. It was great to be here.
I love America.
Outstanding. Great to be here and great to see you today.
Well, great to see you too. Well, Elaine and Kevin, what are we talking about today on the show?
Well, Philip, it is a twofold. First being the impact of divorce and separation affecting your sale and purchase of a home.
Okay.
And I had a question emailed to me from Charles. And Charles wanted to know, what are the first steps he needs to take to sell his home as he is separated from his wife?
Very interesting subject. So what did you tell him?
Well, I told him you need to consult an attorney first. But
That's true.
And so I also told him you need a separation agreement before you would put the house on the market, unless both of you can agree to sign it. Because if anything comes up, it always reverts back to the separation agreement. On that being said, if you already have a divorce or in the middle of a divorce and the judge is saying y'all can't decide what you want to do with your house or other real estate properties, then the judge decrees what's going to go on. And then you have to go by what the judge decrees. And you can't just pick an agent.
No.
Like, say Kevin's getting a divorce. And he calls me up. He says, Elaine, I want you to sell the house for me. We're getting a divorce. That can't happen like that. A lot of times, if the other half does not agree,
right,
then you will have, you submit a list of names to the judge or the court, and the court will pick one. Both sides will submit names, and then the court will pick one.
Mm.
It can get, it's not as cut and dry as most people think. We're going to get a divorce and sell the house. It's not that cut and dry. And I'm sure Kevin's run into some issues when he's trying to get loans for people in this situation.
Absolutely, Elaine. Yeah, those are some great points. And you said, say Kevin was going through a divorce. Kevin actually is going through a separation and divorce, so I do have some firsthand knowledge. Yeah. And I am also currently a homeowner, but I deal with it very regularly in my business, and it's something that can be challenging. One of the things that Elaine mentioned is some of the legal aspects and the importance of having an attorney or at least a really solid agreement. Not only if you have a house to list or sell or keep or whatever you're doing, if someone is purchasing a home, regardless of their previous living situation, renting, owning, whatever, a big part of the process is going to be that agreement. So if you are separated or divorced, those are things that we need to know and document. In Virginia, a written separation agreement isn't always required, so a lot of folks don't have them. But from the mortgage world, we need something in writing. Biggest reason being, under federal regulations from the Dodd-Frank rule several years back, we have to document ability to repay. So that is bills and income. Can they afford to repay this mortgage? It's the thing that we get the most pressure on. It's the thing that we get audited on the most. So when it comes to separation or divorce, we need to know who has to pay what? That's the biggest thing. So does someone have to pay alimony, support, child support? So a separation agreement or divorce decree will specify that. But if that document doesn't exist, then we need both parties that are going through the separation and divorce to write out a statement clearly saying that no one is paying anybody any alimony or support, or if they are, what it is, how much, etc. That needs to be signed, that needs to be notarized. And if it's an amicable separation and divorce, that can happen. But for anybody that's been through it or knows anybody that's been through it, it's not always amicable.
That's true.
It can certainly be challenging when looking towards whatever you're doing next. If you're looking to purchase, then, you know, those are some of the things that we deal with on a regular basis. Now, you know, I'm experienced with it and has certainly worked with many, many customers. So I am very able to walk people through that process. That's just something folks would have to know going into it if they are planning to purchase, that documentation is going to be the key.
Right. Well, Elaine and Kevin, question for you both. How do you cope with dealing with both parties? Because this could be a very traumatic time, as you would know, but I know from the male and the female. So
I'll give you some examples. A couple months ago, I had a client who purchased a home with his divorced wife, but he was still legally married to another wife, and they had a separation agreement. But for all parties concerned, the lender required that the wife sign an addendum prepared by the divorce attorney that she would have no rights on the house he was purchasing with his divorced wife.
Oh, what a tangled web.
Tell me about it. I mean, This is not abnormal.
No,
it's not
abnormal.
And then another one I'll tell you is, as a realtor, I try not to deal with family. And I can tell you why. My brother, God love him, he's had 3 divorces. And one of his divorces, they were fighting. They had the house. I had it listed. So he moves in with me and my husband for 3 months.
Okay.
Well, during the 3 months, suddenly we couldn't have any showings. It wasn't convenient. Things was happening. We'd have to change them. So I told a little fib. I told my brother, and my husband could have cared less. He could have stayed there 100 years. My husband's so easygoing. He don't care. I told him my husband was mad. And that I was going to end up in a divorce. He's going to have to go back home.
Yeah.
Well, it was amazing. As soon as my brother went back home, suddenly the showing started. The price got dropped. And we got the house sold within 4 weeks.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing how that happens. But I just, I have to, I've had a lot of divorce people that I've done their real estate for, I have to hold the hand. I can't show bias from one party to the next. I have to be completely neutral and in the middle, and I have to give them both the same rhetoric and the same black and white, because trust me, if you deviate one period or one T crossed, it's going to come back and get you.
Yeah.
So you have to, it's a fine line you have to walk.
Because
it's not like we are wealthy multimillionaires and we own vast amounts of property, commercial residential property. The real estate, the home, is usually the biggest investment that the average Mr. and Mrs. American has. So it's being the biggest investment and the biggest asset, it becomes one of the most, other than children and who's going to have the custody, is one of the biggest contention points in when they separate. So it's very hard, and I'm sure Kevin, you've had some crazy experiences.
Well, I was gonna ask you, Kevin, because this is gonna come up. If one of the parties wants to take over the mortgage, what do you tell them?
Okay, that's a great question. I'm gonna go ahead real quick first and kind of address and build on what Elaine said about dealing with both parties, because that is significant. And that will lead in to one party or another taking over the mortgage. So generally, in most cases, just one of the parties in that separation or divorce, the husband or wife, is our client. Rarely it's both. And if you've ever applied for a mortgage before, you know that we ask for a lot of sensitive information. We dig and dig. You send us information and documentation, and we dig some more. If you've ever bought anything or sold anything or had a bank account or anything in your life, we're going to figure it out. So we have a lot of confidentiality issues we have to work with. So in dealing with our buyer, our client, we have to first and foremost find out from them what the limits we are allowed to discuss with the other party are. Some say, hey, do whatever you need. Some say, don't tell them anything, which then makes it a little tougher. And it also depends on the situation. You know, as we mentioned, some separations and divorces are very amicable, some aren't. So sometimes our client can get whatever they need from their ex or soon-to-be ex. Other times, they don't want to talk to them. Mm-hmm. So there's been many situations where we become the intermediary. We're the go-between, where we will contact the ex or soon-to-be ex and ask for the documentation we need. You know, sometimes we can say why. We had a customer recently that she wouldn't even let us say that she was buying a house. So we just could only say we were from J.G. Wentworth, not J.G. Wentworth Home Lending. You know, so it can be very, very tricky, but we respect the client's need for confidentiality. Plus, as we talked about, there's a lot of legal issues in a separation and divorce. We don't want to say or do anything that would complicate that and the other aspects of that process. But along those lines, you asked about what if one party wants to take over the mortgage. So let's say they own a home together.
Right.
And they decide that they no longer want to be there together. Lane talked a little bit about selling it. Both parties have to agree to sell it and list it. But what if one of them wants to keep it? You know, it's a family home. Yeah. One of them wants to keep it, maybe keep the kids there, whatever it may be.
Buy out the spouse.
Right. Yeah. So that's a whole different situation and scenario. Those are typically handled as a refinance because usually one, you know, usually both spouses are on the mortgage and or title to the home. So we handle that as a refinance and we work it pretty much like any other application and refinance. We take your application information and whoever is keeping that house just has to qualify on their own. So say they bought the house together, they may have used both incomes and jobs and credit and everything to qualify. For one person to take it over, we can't just drop the person. They can't just go away because that's how that mortgage was made. That's how it was agreed to repay. That's how the risk was determined that they qualified for that. So for one person to do it, they have to apply on their own, qualify on their own with credit, with affordability, with everything. Then we do the refinance, pay off the old mortgage, it goes away. And then the new mortgage is just in the name of whoever is staying on the house. And then the closing and title company or real estate attorney that handles the transaction for the refinance can handle the deed, or the divorce attorney or whoever can handle getting the other person off the deed as part of that transaction. So that can all happen simultaneously. So it is very possible, and one person can keep the house as long as one person qualifies. Or if that doesn't work, I've seen it where they will keep the existing mortgage, keep everything the same, but through the divorce decree, etc., one party is responsible for the payments. Now, that can be another complication down the road. So say, we'll make up a name, you know, Bob is staying in the house and taking over the payments, and we'll say Mary decides to go elsewhere. That mortgage is still in Mary's name, so if she wants to buy again, that's another set of circumstances where we will have to prove that she is not obligated for that mortgage.
Yeah.
That would be your separation or divorce decree. But we also have to show that Bob is making the payments independently and on time. Just because the divorce decree says that she's no longer responsible, we need to show that Bob is making the payments, because from the mortgage company's perspective, we made the loan to both people. You're still both responsible.
Yeah. And Kevin, if Bob doesn't make the payments, Mary's credit goes down the tubes with Bob.
Suppose it would, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't care what the decree says.
Yep. So it's safer to get the other person off the mortgage and make a clean break. Because, yes, you're right. If something happens to Bob and he doesn't make the payments, guess what? It goes back on Mary.
And the Sumables, remember back in the day when Kevin and I first built Williamsburg? We were the founding fathers here. Mm. Back in the
day. I'm not quite that old.
Back in the day, Assumables was very popular. You could even assume VA loans. Do you see that coming back?
Oh, it's still here. Conventional mortgages, your Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you typically cannot assume those. And assuming a mortgage is you're really just taking over payments. So they are more popular on a VA mortgage. They are possible on an FHA mortgage. But let's use a VA mortgage as a great example. So say I'm a veteran and I bought a home and got a great interest rate. So say I bought it last year and locked in at a 3.75% on a 30-year fixed interest rate. 5 years from now, I get orders and I'm being moved to California. I can sell my home, and on my VA mortgage, it can be assumed by another veteran. So let's say 5 years from now, mortgage rates are 6.5%. So I can put my house on the market and advertise my assumable mortgage so someone can buy my house and get a mortgage at 3.75 versus the current at, you know, 6.5, whatever it may be. So that makes my house way more attractive, way more affordable. That veteran just has to qualify for the assumptions. They still have to be credit qualified, income qualified, and they put their VA eligibility in place of that veteran, basically saying that, you know, they can also do a VA mortgage, and that all has to go through a process. But the assumption is a great option for someone who has a really great mortgage, a very low interest rate. It can help make the sale of their home even more attractive.
You just don't hear about them anymore like you used to, because back in the day it was really popular at one point.
I think you're going to hear about it more now that we've had a number of years with low, low interest rates, and now we're starting to get some climbing interest rates. Interest rates are expected to increase over the years as the economy recovers. We all remember when the economy was booming, rates were higher. The economy fell apart, mortgage rates went lower, the economy is coming back, so mortgage interest rates are starting to normalize.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Kevin Onozuk. He's the branch manager from J.G. Wentworth Home Lending. And you'll find Kevin at 113 Bullifants Boulevard, Williamsburg. That's, if you're not sure where Bullifants is, it's off of Moortown Road. And you can contact Kevin and 757-220-5491. And grab a pen for this, because I'm going to give you an email address. And I'm going to give you a cell number as well. The cell is 757-645-8996. And here we go with his...
Philip, I'll save you. I have a shorter one than you have written down there.
All right.
It's K for my first name, Kevin, then Onizuk, O-N-I-Z-U-K, at jgw.com. So K-O-N-I-Z-U-K at J-G-W for jgwentworth.com.
That's great.
That's much shorter.
And we are also talking with Elaine Von Cannon. She's Associate Broker, ABR, SRES Notary, Team Leader, Residential and Commercial Property Manager. She's the Managing Partner, Von Cannon Stark Commercial Division, Award-Winning Agent, REMAX Hall of Fame, Member of the National Association of Residential Property Managers, Coldwell Banker Traditions of Williamsburg. You'll find them at 4071 Ironbound Road, Williamsburg. And here's a number for you to contact her, 229-9595. And I'll give you another number, which I'm sure this will be just as easy, 288-4685. Von Cannon Real Estate at Cox.net. Okay, we've got that out of the way, and now you're enlightened of who we're talking with. Elaine and Kevin, is there anything else that you would like to say about this subject, as I know that it does affect a lot of folks?
Yes. You know, I have investors, and a lot of times they will buy property in their name without using their spouse.
Yeah.
So I would suggest, if you are going to do that, like I have my investors do, I have an LLC. They have an LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And to put it in the LLC, that would still impact on a divorce, but it's a lot less hassle if you have it in a protected LLC.
Yeah.
Don't you agree, Kevin?
I agree.
But you can't get a mortgage in the LLC. You have to put it in the LLC afterwards.
Well, there actually are some options coming back where you can purchase in the name of the LLC. You're still basically issuing a personal guarantee. It's your credit, it's your income, et cetera. But we actually do have some programs where you can do that again. They're starting to come back. You know, a lot of that stuff went away.
Yes, it went
away.
A lot
of it's starting to come back.
That is true. And something else I wanted to ask you, Kevin, about people getting a mortgage when they're divorcing. What do you look at? It's still debt versus income ratio. But what do you look at when it comes to, like, the debt being, if, say, one spouse says it's not mine, the other spouse says, well, I'm not taking it all. How do you as a lender deal with that?
That's a great question, Elaine. And honestly, it's if you are a signer on the debtor obligation, it's pretty much yours. So if you have a joint credit card, that is your debt. The divorce decree may say one person is responsible, but you signed, you are still obligated. So most payments in general would have to still be counted against you, even though you say, hey, the ex is paying that. We can remove them in some cases, depending upon what type of debt it is. If we have two things, number one, your separation or divorce decree showing that the other person is to be responsible for it. And the second thing, as I mentioned before, proof they are paying it. Just because, say, a car loan, the divorce decree says Bob is supposed to be paying it doesn't mean he is. So we need proof that Bob is paying it independently from an account that is not a joint account, just his, for 12 months or more, and then we can not count that.
Right.
But to also answer your question, Philip, about anything else on the subject, it takes a lot to get through this process. When someone's going through a separation and divorce, it's a tough time. In many cases, the worst thing anybody will go through in their entire life. It's legally complicated. There's major financial impacts to all parties. You may have families that are dividing, so it's in a very emotional time. So it's important to understand that when you're working with anybody going through separation and divorce. But when you're going through it, it's also important to know that you really need, more than anything else, to have experienced professionals helping you out. You will likely have an attorney helping you through certain aspects of the process, but when it comes to your home, you need to talk to a qualified and experienced real estate broker, realtor. You also need to speak with a very qualified and knowledgeable mortgage person. Even if you're not applying for anything, even if you're not planning anything, just call and ask. We are always happy just to answer questions, just to give folks some perspective and just some information on what's coming and some ideas on how to proceed.
Well, that's very enlightening. Well, the monthly question is, Elaine and Kevin, what are you seeing in the market since our last show?
Well, it's very interesting. I had received yesterday an article from Lawrence He is the NAR, National Association of Realtors, chief economist. And he is saying the economy is advancing, which we know. Anticipated growth rate of 4-5% in the second quarter is remarkable. For the year, the GDP will exceed 3%. That's the market growth rate. Will exceed 3% for the first time since 2005. Employment likewise is strong with 5 million new jobs, and the unemployment rate is down 3.8%. So wages are up too by 2.8% over the last 12 months. And yet, home sales are down 1% from this time last year, and home buyer sentiment is tepid. The number of consumers strongly expressing it is a good time to buy fell 38-5% in the first half of the year compared to 45% last year. And what was behind this? For a lot of, I don't know, I'm going to condense this for you real quick. The buyers look, unfortunately, once you put something on the internet, it never goes away. It's like a poltergeist. It keeps coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on and they look and they say, well, Kevin bought this home for $80,000, but Kevin bought the home 20 years ago.
Right.
But why should Kevin make and sell it to me for $185? I don't feel like Kevin should be making any money. This is buyer sentiment.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Well, that, and you can't get them over this hump a lot of times. Then you have the sellers, and they, if they do not spit shine that residence and get it looking good, then the buyers are going to walk, and the buyers want a spit shine residence.
Of course they do.
And their thing is, well, I'm just going to keep renting. Oh, you are. You're going to keep living in your mother and father's basement, and are you going to keep, you know? And then the sellers get mad, and they put their stuff out to rent, and we're in a vicious circle. It's like a cat chasing its tail. So it is the duty of the loan officers and of the agents to educate the buyers about this.
Yeah.
Kevin, your thoughts?
No, I think that's very, very accurate. It's definitely a unique market right now, and a lot of it does have to do with the economic recovery. I mentioned that as the economy recovers and improves, as it's doing, it will impact interest rates and mortgage payments and home affordability. But it also increases demand. As people have jobs and their wages increase, a lot of folks are deciding to buy or sell and buy something bigger, something that they've maybe waited on. You know, as folks feel more confident and more financially stable, they're taking actions that haven't been taken in a while. There's a lot of pent-up demand. And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of buyers coming out and not enough houses on the market. So if you're thinking about selling, there's a lot of demand and things are selling fast.
Well, that's good to know. And I hope that this has been a good, some good advice to our listeners. I want to thank you, Elaine and Kevin, and we'll thank our ladies and gentlemen for listening. This has been Philip Newbury for WMBG FM 97.7 and AM 740, Williamsburg's radio station, and now we're back to the music.